Mafia Podcast.
Greetings to all you listeners out there, both our regular Goombas who've been listening to us since the beginning, and you new listeners who are just joining us for the first time. I am the main host for this show. I am the Reverend Godfather, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Long Coat Mafia Podcast. I hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving, and depending on when in the week you hear this, I hope your Black Friday was safe and fun. You got a lot of great deals, your Small Business Saturday, you got shopped local, and your site got great deals on Cyber Monday. But we have a lot of stuff to talk about. I'll try to keep this short. Every time I say that, I wind up doing an hour program. But I'm here doing this solo. This is going to be a busy week for me and the show because this upcoming Saturday we'll be in Waynesboro, Pennsylvania. And Sunday, which is December 3rd and 4th, we will be, like I said, in Waynesboro, Pennsylvania for the Winter Pop Culture and Comic Wonderland, hosted by a friend of the show, Matt Burns. He's doing a small little local show up there. We will be doing a 3 p.m. panel called When Dinos Attack, so come join us. The tickets are, I think, about $10, give or take a few dollars. So come on down, see us. It'll be a fun time. Buy some stuff, buy from a lot of local vendors, listen to the panels, see a lot of great guests. But before we continue, one of the things I want to give a review on is that about a week or so ago, I received a copy of, again, another friend of the show, Earl Hairston. He gave me, actually, that's a little bit of a lie. I picked up the book off of him. He would have gave it to me for free, but I wanted to support him. He has a book out called I Saw Your Mother Crying. It's a memoir of sorts. That's what I want to classify it as. I'm going to read you the description on the back because I'll get into the reasoning why in a moment. But the description on the back says, in 1986, a small town in West Virginia was under siege from cocaine and Jamaican posses. This is the story of my life. I, too, was under siege to cocaine. A perfect storm of addiction, consuming everything in its wake, including me. It is the story of a mother's love for her son, her family, and her unrelenting efforts to break that siege in their lives. A story of redemption and salvation through a personal awakening and the efforts of a community that refused to watch the continued destruction. A roller coaster ride of blood, pain, tears, and fury, told through the eyes of a man who found himself deep in the belly of a monster, swallowed whole by the white-knuckle grip of addiction. A mother's love and her desperate attempt to break the cycle was the path to redemption, but would he choose to follow it? That is the only thing, out of respect for Earl, that's the only thing I would read from this book is what's on the back cover. My review of this book, it gets a very hard 8 out of 10. It's the reason why I say that, when you speak to a lot of readers of books, some will tell you that some books are hard reads, some books are easy reads, meaning a book like, I'm not disrespecting any authors here, like Frank Herbert's Dune, to me, is a very hard read because it's so, it's got its own creation of words. Some people think The Hobbit is a very hard read, or the Lord of the Rings trilogies are very hard to read because of how it is, what's so tight-knit with the story that it can be a hard read. An easy read could be something like one of Jim Butcher's sorcery novels, like his novels in regards to his Harry Dresden books. It's an easy read, meaning it's quick. Or Harry Potter, it can be an easy read. But this book is a very, very thick read. And what makes it a thick read is that it's very emotional. And the reason why I said I'm respecting Earl by only reading the back cover, because even though Earl wrote this book, the only person I deem out of respect who is qualified to read out loud from this book is Earl himself. This book is found on Amazon. I think it's about $12 on Amazon. It's worth every penny, but I know you hear asking why am I, if it's worth every penny, why are you giving it an 8 out of 10? It's part of it is because it's that thick read. It is a Dairy Queen milkshake thick read. And what makes it, to me, that thick read is it's very emotional. You'll sense emotion out of here, out of this book. The way he read, I heard Earl read a section out of this book. You hear that emotion in his voice. It's very powerful. The book is basically him in the throes of addiction and how his mom was part of him pulling him out of that. The book, for some might think the downside of the book, Earl, if you're listening to this, I mean it in no disrespect. I could almost see him, you know, putting his hands together and smiling when telling them that. Is that it's about 125 pages. You might be thinking that it's a thicker book, but it's not. It's 100. If you sit down, you could probably read this in about 2 hours. 3 tops. It's, like I said, it's very emotional. And despite the fact that it is emotional, I do recommend you picking it up off of Amazon. There is a Kindle version, ebook version of it. I believe Earl is working on an audiobook version of this. So I don't know when that's going to be released. So I'll probably provide a link to his book in the show description. I do recommend you buying it and showing support to him. Hopefully I'll get a solid interview with Earl in regards to the nuances of the book and who the book is geared for, so forth and so on. Kind of like we did a few months ago with the other author, but this is a non-fiction book. And what that author did, I think it was back in September, if not August, September, that was a fiction book. Earl's book is nonfiction. I don't want to make any guesses as to if it can be geared towards someone who might be fighting addiction and showing that, or someone who's coming out of addiction themselves, and it's a perfect, I would like to say it might be a perfect book for someone who's coming out of an addiction, in regards to showing that they too, like, look at Earl saying that, Earl saying in essence, look at me, I made it past my addiction, you can too, so forth and so on, but I don't want to put words in Earl's mouth. Hopefully, like I said, I thought I had recorded a passage, Earl reading a passage from this book when we were starting up our podcast last year. Turns out I was mistaken, but I did initially hear him read from a precursor to this book last year. That was maybe about a month or two prior to us starting up the show, so I didn't get any recording to that, because though if I did, I would include it here in the episode, because again, the only person I deem worthy of reading from this book is Earl. That's why I only read from the back cover, because of that. To continue on, because I'm starting to get a little choked up talking about this Earl's book. Again, it's an solid 8 out of 10. Though it's a thick read, it's a short read. Check it out. But to move on, as I said at the start of the show, it is the holiday season has officially begun. I know a lot of you out there might not really worship the holidays, but it is a time of hardcore shopping. I just want to relay a type of advice for a lot of you out there. There's a lot of be forewarned, especially with it being kind of the start of a lot of cyber deals, Cyber Monday deals, and so forth and so on, that usually extend throughout the holiday season. There are a lot of scalpers out there doing shady things, so please keep an eye out. I know some of you might be trying to gun for that infamous unicorn of a holiday item known as the Nintendo Classic. What a lot of scalpers are doing right now are going to stores, buying the store out of these NES Classics, then flipping them on eBay or Craigslist. You know what? I wouldn't say pause this. Let me bring up Craigslist and see what is Craigslist. Let's go with the Winchester Craigslist. See what's going on there. Let's see here. Video game. Toys and games. Video gaming. Let's see. 360 stuff. I know through various shows that I listen to, several people have been flipping it for several hundred dollars. Sometimes it's been going for as little as, oh, here it is, someone is selling it in, West Virginia, for $300. They're flipping it. Some people will be, I see one, let's see, all I've seen right now is just one. Please be patient with stuff like this. It's kind of hard to say if Nintendo is causing this type of scarcity. Just be wary. Be patient. Hopefully by the time, maybe a week or so before Christmas, stores will have a bunch of them. I heard reports that on Walmart.com, there was a Nintendo Classic going for $500, but when a lot of my sources did their digging, they kindly informed me by saying that what Walmart is doing is kind of allowing outside resellers to come in and sell stuff on the site, kind of like how Amazon does their business, meaning, if I wanted to sell something on Walmart.com, I would apply to Walmart, show them that I have a business license and so forth and so on. And if I'm approved, I could sell stuff on Walmart.com. And if it's an $100 item, I think Walmart gets like 10, 15%. That's that. So please be patient with that. And one of the things I've been hearing, also, that being said, like I said, be wary of scalpers. Even though I recommend a lot of you to shop out there to shop local and to shop the mom and pop shops throughout your community because it does support community. I also recommend please be don't be rude, but please spread the word that there are a lot of I won't say a lot, but please spread the word to your fellow geeks, your fellow nerds that there are some small businesses that don't know what they have and they are making the mistake not in your favor, but their pocket's favor. Meaning we have a little type of antique type store locally here that is trying to break into the comic book reseller. They don't sell anything on, they're not like the hobby shop that's in town that's also, that deals with Magic the Gathering, Dungeons and Dragons, and so forth and so on, who have reasonable prices on their comics. But what this little antique shop is doing, they're trying to sell the older issues, the back issues, the ones that they think are worth a lot of money. But the thing is, they are grossly overpricing the back issues, where an issue is worth only $10, $15, they're selling it for $30, $40. It's kind of hard to say, you know, what they got the issues for themselves, but a lot of businesses like this are catering to people that don't know what the actual price is. They're catering to friends of our, I won't say ours, but the people that out there that are don't know anything about the fandom. They don't know anything about the geek culture. They don't know about the hobby itself. So if my suggestion is, if friends of yours, co-workers, so forth and so on, are looking to buy something like this or get into a hobby, please be kind, be courteous, and let them know that, you know, help them along. Help them with their hobby. I know one of the things I was looking at to try to add to my collection, one of the other antique little stores in town, was selling, I won't say was selling, but what they are selling, I gotta see, as soon as I get cash, I want to pick it up, or at least try to pick it up. They're selling a movie poster of The Final Destination. Not Final Destination. I think it's either Final Destination or Final Countdown. I want to get it. It was an early to mid-80s movie. And they had it for about $45, least listed in frame. Which, to me, sounds like a good price. But as I was saying this, I was looking up on IMDb in regards to the proper name of the film. It is The Final Countdown. It stars Kirk Douglas. It's a 1980 film. But before I pick this up, even though to me $45 sounds about right for this poster, it looks right for the condition of the poster as well. I want to make sure the dimensions are right, that meaning that, for one, the poster was not trimmed in any way to fit into this poster, poster frame, because it's like the $5, $10 poster frame from Walmart. So what I'm going to do is, before I even pick it up, is, if I choose to pick it up, is to get the dimensions or find a website that has, sells vintage, movie posters, get the dimensions on this poster, so that when I go there, I know exactly how big it's supposed to be, and how much the true price is supposed to be. I could say this, it is a folded poster, not a rolled poster. For those out there, I know many of you do not collect movie posters like I normally would, or I do. In regards to some of the older movies, like from the 80s, I'd say gunning from maybe about 85 back, movie posters, when they were sent to the theater, they were actually folded up and sent that way. Whereas now, the movie posters you see hanging up in movie theaters are rolled. So, I didn't see any roll marks in this, because what tends to happen in regards to people getting movie posters that were initially folded is that they tend to roll them up instead of refolding it, which causes more damage. So if someone does pick up an older movie poster, it's better to fold it than roll it, and vice versa with a newer movie. Meaning, if you get a Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's, let's say Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire poster, if it's rolled, roll it. You know, if it's folded, keep it folded. But a lot of the newer movies, like Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, the posters come rolled. But I want to make sure the price is right. If the poster is $40 and he tacked on an extra $5 for the frame, you know what? That's fine. But please be aware. Do your research. I know a lot of you out there have smartphones. So pull out your smartphone. Bring up the Safari browser if you're using an iPhone, or the Chrome browser if you're using an Android phone, or if you're using a Windows phone, but either way, bring up your phone's browser, do a little bit of research, do a little digging, make sure what you're paying for is actually what you're paying for, give or take a couple of bucks, depending on the price, meaning if it's, what you're buying is, let's say, $20, and the range is between $15 and $30, or I should say between $10 to $30, and it's right in that sweet spot, then yeah, fine, pick it up, use your direction, judgment on it, make a judgment call, or shop with retailers that you know and actually know and trust. If you know somebody where you work, or a friend that wants to get into one of your hobbies that you are into, whether it be comic books, movies, etc., or Magic the Gathering, let them in on your favorite shops where you tend to hunt for your stuff, because that way they know who to trust in regards to shopping for what they would like. Next up, to kind of move on here, because it's just me running the show. Hopefully, next week, right after the show, we'll probably, me and Big Candy, because he's going to be at the Winter Pop Culture and Comic Wonderland show, we'll probably do some sort of review. I'm not exactly sure what we're going to be doing at the table, but there will be a review episode or mini episode like this, hopefully, going into that. But there's another thing I want to talk about before I move into my last review, and that is, it appears, let me pull up the article here, where's my little arrow, there it is, pull up the article here, this is courtesy of, Bleeding Cool. I don't really put much weight in Bleeding Cool, but an article came across my hands. Why did it do that? Dang nabbit. It looks like one of the apps on my computer decided to open up on me instead of what I wanted. And that's not what I wanted. I want an app up. Not the stupid... I wanted my browser up. lose that. I don't want to search. I don't want to search Amazon. I want to close it. When I close it, I want to read an article. There we go. Like I said, the site's, it comes from bleedingcool.com. This was maybe last week, early last week, about Wizard World. The site is claiming, I'll word it like that, that Wizard World is running out of money. It says that they received or looked through the SEC filings of Wizard World. And what stuck out from their eyes was the paragraph that states, the company estimates the cash and cash equivalents currently on hand as of November 21st, 2016, is insufficient to fund, let me reread that. The company estimates the cash and cash equivalents currently on hand as of November 21st, 2016, is insufficient to fund its operations on a long-term basis past December 31st, 2016. That is a very alarming, but not surprising. But there is another quoted part of that report, I think, that says, in order to fund operations past that date is dependent on management's plans, which include the raising of capital through debt and or equity markets with some additional funding from other traditional financing sources, including term notes or the significant reduction of operating expenses until such time that funds provided by operations are sufficient to fund working capital requirements. Bleeding Cool says it's a shame that Wizard World has been doing, really, as Wizard World, their quote is, which is a shame, really, as Wizard World has been doing significantly better in 2016 than 2015, according to the figures. That last year they made over $2 million. This year, a positive income over $750,000. So that meant they didn't have to. Let's see. According to the figures, last year, a net income of $2 million. This year, positive. I think they meant this year they made $750,000 more than last year, which made them exempt from paying extra taxes and so forth and so on. But they said, but for the quarter, gross sales turnover was down because they held fewer shows. Several shows are money losers. As a quote, we expect to produce 19 live events during the year ending December 31st, 2016. Historically, we have operated profitable live events in Philadelphia, Chicago, New Orleans, Columbus, Portland, Nashville, Austin, Sacramento, Louisville, Minneapolis, sorry guys, and gals, San Antonio, Atlanta, Tulsa, Reno, St. Louis. But we have operated in a deficit in other events. What that means is their Richmond show was at a loss, because I know they have a Richmond show. From what I heard, they have a show in, they bought out, I think they bought out a show down in Florida too. But what I've been hearing over the past couple of years is that a couple of shows in certain states have been becoming very popular, Wizard would come in and toss money at them and take over the show. It seems that they're cutting back on that or reselling the names to other companies. They mentioned in the article, or at least the quoted part of the article they mentioned Philadelphia. I don't know if their Philly show has changed, but initially, way back when, I'm talking about 16 years ago, a little past 16 years ago, it would have been 14, I'm sorry, because their Philadelphia show started in 2002. What it was going to be was, my impressions were, their Chicago show was their flagship show. That was their first show ever with the Wizard World name, because their comic Price Guide was still out. Then in 2002, their Philadelphia show came to be, and what it was going to be is the Chicago was the flagship Northern Midwest show, and Philadelphia was going to be their flagship East Coast show. And all of a sudden, Texas popped up. I think it was either Sacramento or San Antonio. Well, I think it might have been their Sacramento show. It was their California. So they had one in Chicago, one in Pennsylvania, one in Texas, one in California, and for a while they had one in Boston. And what turned out after a few years, I can't speak for Chicago and the rest, but they had to ditch the Boston show because it started getting too expensive to run in Massachusetts. But for a while after that, it was just those four shows, and Philadelphia was treated like the bastard child of the Wizard World convention circuit, meaning that a lot of retailers, major retailers like DC Comics and Marvel, were jumping ship. But speaking to one of the major artists that used to go to the show and a bunch of other shows, they said, well, Wizard World has a nasty habit of doing things wrong. So I can't really, I could vouch for some things, but I can't really vouch for others. They might have improved their ways, but it's kind of hard to say. But over years, Wizard and their shows have gone downhill. Granted, they're a pop culture show. For a lot of people, it's the biggest show that they have in the area. I cannot knock that. I cannot say that that's a bad thing, because even though there are a lot of shows, like very small shows that are wonderful, have great guests, and you should visit these shows, because I think the winner of Pop Culture and Comic-Con in, not Comic-Con, Wonderland in Waynesboro, Pennsylvania, their ticket price is only $10, and I think that's for a weekend pass. Don't quote me on that. let's see here. Let's see, what is the ticket prices for, for State Con. Okay, let's see what the ticket prices for the con we are going to be at this Saturday and Sunday, as Frontier Internet is going to be so slow and so forth and so on. But either way, Wizard, for the first time con goer that can't afford to go to San Diego or New York or a Baltimore Comic-Con, and it's close by, yes, go. just watch your spending, because the Wizard World shows can be, adult admission for Saturday is $8. $8 for Saturday, $7 for Sunday. And for adult admission for two-day pass is only $10 for an adult. And they're going to have a lot of great guests. So it's $10 at the door. for a 2-day pass. Yes, or spray it because it's fun. Get it while it's hot. Go support the Winter Pop and Comic Wonderland this Saturday and Sunday if you're able to make it to Waynesboro, Pennsylvania. Go to their website, 4statecon.com. It's F-O-U-R, statecon.com. And you can get your tickets online. I think it's an extra dollar and change for the weekend pass, making it the weekend pass only $12. But loads of guests. There's going to be charity drives. Lots of stuff on, probably on the cheap. Lots of affordable celebrity guests, guest artists, the whole nine yards. But going to a small show like the Winter Pop and Comic Wonderland means that it's close for you. You get a sample of what a big con is, with that very small con feel to it. It's the best of both worlds. Let's see. The artists, let's see, who we have? Neil Vokes is going to be there. Greg Blake is going to be there. Let's see, who else? Comic artist Rich Piotta is going to be there. He's done Deadpool, Iron Man, Wolverine, Iron Fist, and Booster Gold. Yeah, come see him. Might get an interview. Let's see, Paris Collins. Might get an interview from him. Let's see. I wouldn't mind getting a couple. I know we interviewed a comic artist at our local library Comic Con, but I'll see if I can get another artist to answer a few questions. But that's the thing. Yeah, you're going to get some bigger names at a bigger show like Wizard World, but the thing with with the Wizard World is that you get the bigger names, but the downside is that you have to deal with the bigger names, and deal with their schedule. With a show like Winter Pop and Comic Wonderland, you might not get the bigger names, but you're getting friendlier guests, you're getting friendlier vendors. It's all for the best for that. But now on to the last review. I was going to give two movie reviews for you this week, but alas, it's only going to be one. It's going to be Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. But I was going to give two reviews. The other movie was going to be Arrival. But it was given to me from good old Uncle Tony. So the sound quality wasn't all there. I had to really concentrate hard on listening to it through my headphones. But the downside with the movie, I'm talking about Arrival, is that it was slower than frozen molasses trying to get uphill on its own power. At least, like, the movie Contagion kept going a little bit, even though itself was slow, but it still had a decent pace and kept you intrigued. Arrival, I barely made it 20 minutes, 30 minutes into a 2-hour and 12-minute movie or whatever it was. It was a 2-hour and change movie. I barely made it 20 minutes. God, it was slow. It was awful. I didn't like it. I skipped ahead a little bit. It was still equally slow. It didn't seem like it. It picked up pace. And I did manage to, here's the spoilers for it. The aliens are not linear. I.e., they're kind of like the aliens from Star Trek DS9. I barely made it. I doubt I'll even rent it. Thankfully, I got it for free from Uncle Tony. I'll probably be deleting it shortly. But the other movie I thought I was going to go see, but I decided to come home because the time difference between when Fantastic Beasts ended and the showing of this next movie was about an hour later. I didn't want to stick around the theater for an hour. And that was the movie I was thinking of seeing is Mona. But what I'll probably do is see it after we're done with the show on this weekend, and I'll wander up and go see it and come back if I have the cash, and I'll tack on the review of that movie on our review episode, so we'll see about that. But Fantastic Beasts, it's a movie written, I'll say thankfully, written by J.K. Rowling herself, but it's not really what I expected the movie to be, meaning that I was expecting more so, I won't say I was expecting more so like a Steve Irwin type of show or a type of National Geographic type show, type of movie sort of deal with this guy, you know, trancing all across Europe and America, finding these weird magical beasts and capturing them and so forth and so on and writing down notes and so forth and so on. But it takes place in roughly 1920, in the early 1920s, kind of mirroring the early days of that whole aspect. There's a lot of nods to the Harry Potter series, or future nods to the Harry Potter series, like Hogwarts, Dumbledore, the whole nine yards. But the movie seems forced, like someone twisted JK's arm to do this movie. It's going to be be a whole new series of movies. I don't know if it's doing well. I'll probably see more later. I could pull it up right now. Let's see here. Let's see. Close that. Frontier is so slow, folks. I hate to do this a lot. I should have been more prepared, but still. Let's see here. In the news. Let's see the box office results for. Let's see. This is as of 1:30 in the morning. Number one was Mona, making $55.5 million its first weekend out. Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them made $45 million this weekend, coming in the number two spot, making a total gross of $156 million with a $180 million budget week two. This is good because it's definitely making its money back. It looks like the number three spot was Doctor Strange. Total gross. It made $13 and change million this past weekend with a total gross of $205 million with a budget of $165 million. So it looks like it's now making its promotional profit back. We'll see how it does over overseas. But to give you an idea on the Arrival, well, I won't say The Arrival. The Arrival was a Charlie Sheen movie back in the late 90s, which was very decent, mind you. I kind of like that. But Arrival made $11 million, and yes, it barely, it made its money back, it made a little bit into its profits, but I foresee, don't really foresee it going too much further. But Fantastic Beasts, it seems, like I said, Forrest, it seems like J.K. Rowling was rehashing a lot of stuff from earlier books, mainly the Goblet of Fire. And it seemed like a little bit of a commentary on folks here in America being a little bit too stuck up or too backwater. I don't mean that in a bad way, but that was the 20s as it is. Meaning there were some parts of the movie where Newt was, who was the main character in all this, passes the comment that in regards to the American magical law saying that they can't, that the wizards and witches can't marry, can only marry other witches and wizards, not what they call nomads or muggles. And he makes the comment on saying, I keep forgetting you Americans are so backwater and stubborn. But it has its parts. A lot of it's cute. It does have its moments and its jokes. But it could have been a little bit more. As stated in a lot of promotional, Johnny Depp is in this movie for about a minute and a half tops. The good thing is it's not Johnny Depp playing Jack. He's not playing the character that he's playing as Captain Jack Sparrow, which means that what Johnny Depp has been doing for the past couple of movies that I've seen him in, he's playing a variant of Captain Jack Sparrow. And this, he's not really, he's playing more so Johnny Depp, which is good. I don't really think that this movie is for kids. It's more so for the Harry Potter fans that grew up watching the movies, reading the book, the Potter books. But this movie is based on a, not even, I want to say a 60-page book that was done up for charity. It's kind of like the board game movies that are coming, that came out, like Battleship, meaning that, ooh, let's make a story out of something that doesn't really have a story, and give it extra story by using backstory. I can understand why they were doing it, like giving story from the whole Potter universe, and adding history and aspect of it, but not really, but who knows. It was a decent film. It was very tolerable. It had its chuckles at times and so forth. It was what I would love to have seen as well is more of a movie version of The Chosen One as well. But that's more of a play that wasn't really written by J.K. Rowling, and it had its own issues. But this movie gets a somewhat solid 6.5 out of 10. I was going to give it a solid 7, but it has a lot of things that are not really going for it. So, that being said, that's it on that. I do recommend if you are a Harry Potter fan, going to see it and liking it and maybe, who knows? I think J.K. Rowling put out a book version of the screenplay for this movie. So, if you like it, buy it. I know a lot of Potter fans are going to go see it. So, that's it. That's it for right now. I'm going to shut down the episode for tonight. If you are listening through a app that catches podcasts, just to let you know that we are on iTunes and on Google Play Music, so that could be a hell of a lot easier for you to snag our episodes, and you could subscribe to us on iTunes and Google Play Music, so you could always have an episode on hand. But the downside is Google Play Music and iTunes is only limits your episodes, or if you're a first-time listener, iTunes and Google Play Music only lets you listen to the past 20 episodes. So, you can always go to our website, which is thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com, and see our whole library of episodes from our early beta episodes to this current episode, and then some. So you can listen to other older episodes on there, like our Crow panel we did October last year, or our Good versus Evil panel that we did back in April this year. So go there, check it out, listen to our past episodes. If you want to email us or comment on an episode, you're more than welcome to do so. Our email address is longcoatmafia@gmail.com. You can email us comments, questions, smart remarks. We will read your emails on the air. We do get emails in from other podcasters and so forth and so on, but those we don't read on the air because they're business related or podcast related. So, we do have a social media page, or I should say Facebook page. Our social media is facebook.com/TheLongCoatMafiaPodcast. Like us on Facebook by going there. You could always be reminded when we have a new episode coming up. More news is spread out throughout the week. Same thing with Twitter. You can message us on Facebook too as well if you have questions and comments and smart remarks. The show will respond to them, or our mascot will respond to you. Whoever gets to the message first. Please be patient with the messages, because me, the mascot, and my co-hosts all have paying jobs, so and activities outside of the show, so it might take us some time before we realize that there is a message waiting for us. So please be patient with that. Our Twitter page, or our Twitter handle, is LongCoatMafia, and our Instagram is also LongCoatMafia. So you could always go on those pages, look for us, and follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Links are always provided in our show notes. Let's see what else. We will be having possible giveaways starting next week. I'll see. I think I have a few DVDs to hand out, or at least part of a giveaway. Same thing with a poster. A signed poster from Earl. So I'll see who gets what. So you might get a chance to get something before Christmas from the show. Details soon. So please follow us on our social media. See what else. As always, we do have a versus out for you to talk about, and that is Star Trek's Borg versus Stargate SG-1's replicators. So tell us who you're thinking of in the battle and why by either messaging us on Facebook or emailing us at longcoatmafia@gmail.com. And that pretty much ends the episode right there. Hopefully you guys, we'll see you guys at the Winter Pop Culture and Comic Wonderland this weekend. And we are out.
It's shocking, humiliating, and it's unacceptable.
Oh, come on. It's a classic. The only show in the world that gets better the more it's rerun.
Do I get a choice?
No! No!
Screw you guys. I'm going home.
Okay, people, move along. There's nothing to see here.